We think women need to talk more openly about money, because money really matters. It shouldn't be embarrassing or confusing. Join the conversation. We'll be discussing a whole range of topics which will help you get comfortable with your finances. Money Matters, brought to you by AJ Bell.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Money Matters podcast. I'm Danny Hewson, and of course I'm joined by Laura Souter. Hi Laura.
Hi there. Hello everyone. So we had so many questions from you all about pensions, both at our live event and when we asked for all of your questions on the previous episode of the podcast. So we've decided to draft in the big guns. We've got Rachel Vay, AJ Bell's head of public policy and a general just pension guru. So she's going to be joining us today, and she's going to be talking about an issue that's increasingly important, which is how to keep track of all of the different pension pots we've all accumulated over our working lives, and when and how to combine them, and then the times when you should just leave them alone and not combine them.
And since we are talking pensions, we thought that we should start off this episode by talking about a massive issue for an entire generation of women who saw the age that they could claim their state pension jump up by 5 years, with, in some cases, very little notice.
Yeah, so you might have heard of the so-called WASPI women. This was massive news a few years ago, and then it hasn't been in the news for a while, or certainly not in the kind of mainstream news. But now, over the past few weeks, we've seen headlines pop up about the failings by the Department for Work and Pension and calls for compensation for this group of women. So we thought it would be worth covering the issue, particularly for those who weren't really aware of it first time around.
So before we hear from Rachel, let's unpack some of this. And I think it's really important to start with who the WASPI women are. So the so-called WASPI, W-A-S-P-I, stands for Women Against State Pension Inequality. And they have been campaigning for almost a decade for what they say would be fairer retirement payouts. So they're women born in the 1950s, and they were impacted by changes to the state pension age. It went from 60 to 65 to match up with men in 2018. Now, both have since changed to 66, the pension age for both men and women, and it's also set to rise again from 66 to 67 between 2026 and 2028. But these women have been campaigning quite vociferously for compensation. They argued that many weren't adequately informed about the big shift, because some were actually forced to wait 6 years longer than they'd previously expected to claim the state pension. They say they weren't adequately notified by the Department for Work and Pensions, and that just meant that they didn't get the time to adjust their plans, which potentially would have made a huge difference to their financial lives. And as I said, this has been going on for almost a decade. And there have been stories about women saying that they have struggled to pay their bills, others saying that they've had to work through ill health, others saying that they would have continued working had they known that the pension age was going to change. And since the campaign began as well, a quarter of a million women, the campaign says, have died while waiting to try and find some kind of compensation payout for what they say that they've been through.
And so this is where this latest news kind of comes in. So there's been this contesting about how this process was run, and the case has been considered by an organisation called the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman, and it's actually been considering this case over a number of years. There's been a few different iterations of these ombudsman rulings. Crucially, I think it's worth pointing out that this relates to how the DWP, the Department for Work and Pensions, notified people and processed these changes, not relating to the actual fairness of changing that pension age. There was a separate case around that, and the court was dismissed these claims. So this is really around what's been termed the maladministration, so the administration side of notifying women about these changes. And the latest latest ruling from this ombudsman has concluded that the DWP was guilty of maladministration when it comes to these increases in the state pension age for women. As part of that, it has to recommend compensation, and it's recommended what's called level 4 compensation, which is, you know, a bit jargony and technical, but it boils down to compensation of between £1,000 and £2,950 per person affected. Now, if we top that up over the total number of people affected, then that gets to a total cost of between 3.5 billion and 10.5 billion. So a huge range there, of course. And that's a cost, obviously, that the government would have to pay if it complied with this ombudsman rulings. Now, that sounds like a huge amount of money. It actually falls short of what WASPI campaigners were calling for. They were calling for £10,000 to be paid to all of those individuals that were affected. However, whilst it falls short of that claim, it obviously is some compensation that they would get, where at the moment, no compensation is promised to them. The difficulty is, and there was a lot of kind of rejoicing around the ombudsman. It's such a tricky word to say, isn't it? Ombudsman's findings. But it doesn't actually have any power to compel the government to provide that compensation or redress. So the fact that it's found against DWP, that it suggested compensation should be issued, is a huge victory for the WASPI campaign. However, it doesn't automatically mean that these women will be compensated and that the government will pay out.
Yeah, because absolutely, the government's under no obligation to follow these recommendations. And as you say, the ombudsman has no power to sort of force their hand. So we know that both the DWP and the Prime Minister's official spokesman has said, look, we're going to look at this report, we're going to respond to recommendations formally in due course, but that has been kicked very much into the long grass. Of course, we are heading towards an election, and this is not going to be dealt with before an election. So in the background, then, this is just picking up pace. And there's been a letter, an open letter, calling for MPs now to be able to have a vote on this compensation. And in just 10 days, it's received the backing of over 150,000 people. So it was a letter to Commons leader Penny Mordaunt urging Parliament to hold the debate and have a vote on this issue. It is hugely political. It is incredibly high profile. And of course, when we're in an election period, and we haven't got an election called at the moment, so it's not going to be at the beginning of May, but it could be any time between now and January. And this is going to be something which is massive. And the issue for whoever is in government afterwards, as you say, is the price tag. We know that the public coffers are looking, well, a little thin, shall we say, at the moment, but it will be a huge election issue. And, you know, if you're sort of thinking back to what these women were experiencing during their working lives, because it has sort of triggered a huge debate about whether or not they should be entitled to compensation, because, you know, we're going to see the state pension age increase on our watch. We're not going to be able to retire at 66, maybe 67, probably 68, or maybe even older. But when you think back, Laura, to the kind of careers that many of these women that were born in the 1950s had, the kind of employment lives that they led, it was very different from today. So in terms of the gender pay gap, it was much greater. In terms of the kind of roles that many of these women were taking and the kind of pensions that they were able to pay into, the pots that they were able to create, it was a very different world. And that backdrop is sort of what we have to think about when we're discussing this issue.
Yeah, exactly. And it's certainly been an effective campaign in terms of the headlines that they've garnered and the progress that they've made so far. But like you say, with a general election looming, both the Conservatives and Labour have said they're reading the Ombudsman ruling, they're taking time to consider it, very much kind of stalling for time territory. And I think it will be really interesting if this becomes a point in the election where the parties have to come out and say what they would do on either side of this, whether they would comply with the ruling, whether they would issue compensation. If they pledged to issue compensation, what level would that be at? Or whether they both try this kind of stalling tactic where they don't grasp the issue for fear of alienating one group or another. I suspect they will try and keep this stance of kicking it down the road for as long as possible until it's confronted. Certainly interesting timing, I think. No one wants to alienate this group of very vocal, very effective campaigners. But likewise, like you say, they're aware that there is a huge price tag attached to issuing this compensation. So it's not something that they can easily whip out. And I think if you're listening to this and think, oh, well, this doesn't relate to me, actually, the issue of the state pension age increasing, like you say, Danny, has an impact on all of us. And so I think you mentioned earlier that the state pension age is due to increase to 67 by 2028, and then it's going to rise again to 68 by 2046, although there are cautions that that could be brought forward, so we'd have a similar case again. And I think we all acknowledge that that's unlikely to be the end of the rises. And so I think it's really important to keep tabs on when the state pension age is, even if you're decades away from retiring, because that state pension gives you a bit of a kind of bedrock, a bit of an amount for your retirement that you can plan your kind of retirement income off. But it is quite tricky. I think if I think about me, I'm in my late 30s. It's kind of hard to think about any timeline for getting the state pension, or even I think my generation feels like maybe it won't even exist by the time we come to retire. So it feels like quite a tricky thing to kind of plan around when there's so much uncertainty about it.
And all this talk as well about pensions, it's not just about this particular issue and the rise in the state pension age, but also in terms of how much the state pension will go up by. We've just seen a really chunky increase, and there's been a lot of debate about the triple lock, which is the mechanism which dictates how much the state pension will go up by, which the government and Labour have committed to over the next parliament. And the expense associated with that, whether or not that in its form can remain.
Yeah, exactly. So from April, from this month, we've seen the new state pension increase, and it's now just over £11,500 a year per person. So it's actually a decent amount, and it's seen an increase, like you say, big increases over the past couple of years, thanks to that triple lock. And so for those that aren't aware, the triple lock is the mechanism by which the state pension increases each year, because if it stayed at the same monetary level as we see inflation and prices rise, then it would obviously lose spending power. The triple lock means that it increases by one of three measures. So the first measure is average earnings growth. The second measure is inflation. And then the third measure is 2.5% each year. So if average earnings growth and inflation are below 2.5%, then it rises by that flat amount. What we saw this year is that earnings growth was huge. And so earnings growth came in at 8.5%, and that provided the measure for the uplift this year. Now, this is obviously good because it means that those who rely entirely on the state pension or majority on the state pension for their retirement income are seeing it increase with rising prices. However, the difficulty is that it becomes a much larger bill for the government to pay. And that's partly why we're seeing these increases in state pension age. People are living longer, they're on the state pension for longer, and that then costs the government as well. And so it's this real balancing act for the government. But once again, we have this thorny issue where either party doesn't want to alienate a certain group of taxpayers. And if you said, we're going to look at the triple lock and we're going to look at a different way of calculating state pension increases, that would be hugely unpopular with all of those people who are either on the state pension or very near the state pension age. And we know that they come out and vote in their hordes. And so we have this situation where both the Conservatives and Labour have committed to the triple lock. But probably what the system needs is actually a more holistic looking at it in terms of what that increase should be pegged to each year, And whether it's sustainable going forward, having this triple lock in place. But it's such a thorny issue, such a thorny political issue that neither party really want to get engaged in that. Neither party want to be associated with a headline that says Conservatives or Labour plan to slash state pension income or don't commit to the triple lock. So it's a really difficult area, I think.
It is an incredibly difficult area. And when you're talking about the state pension, you know, that is just one part of what should be your consideration about your long-term financial planning. Because if you think about living on £221.20 a week, for a lot of people currently in a workplace, they might just be thinking, how on earth could you live on that? And I know that the Pension Lifetime Savings Association did a look recently at a very basic standard of retirement. And if you're a couple and you're both getting the state pension, then that's just enough to be able to get you by, to give you the basics. But if you're a single person, then it's not enough. You are going to need to top up. And that is why workplace pensions or personal pensions are so important today. And as Laura intimated earlier, they are likely to become much more so in the years ahead.
Yeah, and we've had some really great reforms in that area as well, in terms of we had auto-enrolment, which was introduced to workplace pensions in 2012. And that has had a massive impact on our collective retirement pots. It means that people are automatically enrolled into a pension scheme when they start with a company, assuming they meet certain criteria. And it means that more and more people are saving for a pension. It has produced two issues. So that is a very positive thing, and we don't want to take away from that. The first issue is that those auto-enrolment savings levels just aren't sufficient for most people for what they'd need in retirement. Even when you take into account what the state pension is going to pay out, people generally need to save more. And the second issue is that because we all move around jobs a lot, gone are the days where people kind of stay with one employer for their entire career. It means that we've got a whole lot of paperwork and a whole lot of different pensions with different companies that lots of us have just lost track of. And that equates to millions of pots equaling billions of pounds worth of money that lots of people have just lost track of, don't know where it is, and don't know how much is sitting in it. So Danny has caught up with Rachel Vay, AJ Bell's head of public policy and our pensions guru, to talk about this issue of lost pots, but also to give some really important practical points on how you can keep track of that money, how you can bring those pots together, and the things that you need to consider before you do consolidate those pensions.
Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. I want to start with some basics. What is a pension pot? When we talk about a pension pot, what do we mean?
Well, Danny, when you first join your pension plan, you start paying into a pension pot. So you put a percentage of your earnings will go in as a contribution, and your employer will also pay some money into that pension pot. And then you also get some tax back from the government. So that's tax you've already paid on your income, but they will give you a little bit back again. And that all goes into, if you think about it as an imaginary, really big pot of money. And then that is invested, and it stays invested for however long you want it to be, until you want to get hold of your money. And then you have a real big pot of money there for you to use for your retirement.
And I guess there are no limits to how many of these pots that we can have.
No, what happens is every time you join a new employer, you are now automatically enrolled into the pension scheme. So all that means is that you automatically join the pension scheme. You don't really get a choice over it. Now, if you want to opt out, you can do so, and you have to write to your employer and say, I don't want to be in this pension scheme. But if you don't do anything, you just stay within that pension scheme and you keep on building up some money. So every time you join a new employer, you're going to get a new pension pot. Now, the government thinks that we have about 10 or 11 different employments on average throughout a working lifetime. So you could end up with 10 different pension pots or 11, or you could end up with 15, or you could end up with 3. It just depends on what your career, has in store for you.
So pretty easy to lose those then. I'm guessing that there's quite a lot of cash floating around.
Well, yes, especially because you might be in a situation where you've only been working for a certain employer for a couple of months or 2 or 3 months. And then you think, you know, it just wasn't the right fit and you've left them. Or it could have been a part-time position as in a temporary position. And therefore, you've just not really stayed around. And then it's so easy, isn't it, to sort of like lose track of where you're up to with them. All your paperwork and all your administration. You might also have left under, you know, because you really didn't like that employer. And I think sometimes that makes us very less likely to actually go and unearth all the paperwork as well. We don't really want to think about that employment or that time of our lives.
So potentially the pitfalls there are that you could end up having paid into some of these pension pots and the money is just out there somewhere and you don't engage with it.
Well, yes, you just leave it because the pension provider might write to you and they might write to you once a year and give you something called an annual statement. But sometimes that can be quite difficult to figure out exactly what they're telling you and it could be just full of figures and you're thinking, well, it's a long time till my retirement and I'm not really that bothered with this. And I don't really understand what I'm looking at or I don't completely get what I'm looking at. And if that's the case, you've got, I don't know, 10 of these coming in. You might think, oh, actually, I, you know, I'm not really that bothered about it. I'm not really going to think about it. And you just put it on the back burner.
And I suppose if we move house as well, then it's possible that some of the letters which should come to us maybe over the period of time don't come to us and we forget that we did 6 months somewhere and we paid a few hundred pounds into a pension scheme. So if you're in that situation, maybe you've got 10 or 11 pension scheme, pension pots from all the different jobs that you've worked, maybe in just a period of 10 years or so, how do you then go about finding them all?
Well, it can be quite tricky and it's probably the best thing to do is just to write out where you have worked. It's as simple as going back through your life and figuring out what was your first job at 22 or where did you work here and then what happened and trying to remember the little ones in between where you might not have thought that you were in a pension scheme. Especially if you were a student, if you're over the age of 22 probably, but you were still a student or you were doing another job alongside your main one, then you need to just write all of these down and then just check all your paperwork. Now, sometimes these statements are going to come into you by post, as you're right, and therefore if you've moved house, you probably haven't told your pension provider you've moved house. Most people fail. You know, most people forget to do that. So if that's the case, you're not going to get these statements through the letterbox anymore. But a lot of the time, these things are sent out electronically as well. So they're sent out to your email. But again, we all change emails as well occasionally, and we do that to, you know, to make our life easier. But again, you could have just lost track of them. So think about all your employments. It's almost like doing a, you know, this is your life on it. You have to just work out every single employment you've had and then figure out if you have a pension scheme that goes alongside it. For some of them, you might not. You might not have been earning enough to be part of the pension scheme, or it might have been before 2012 when you were automatically put in a pension scheme. So you might not have a corresponding pension for every single employment. But I would imagine for most of them, you probably do. And it's certainly worth asking the question.
It sounds incredibly complicated if there's more than two or three and you've moved house and you've changed your email because you lost your password or something like that. Can you get help doing this?
You can. There's a couple of ways you can do it. I mean, you can do all this legwork yourself and try to figure it all out and write to your old employer to ask them for details and things like that. But you could also do something like you go to a pension provider and some of them offer free pension finding tools. So if you do that and you work with a pension provider, if you just give them the details of all of your old employments and they take that on, they will do the detective work for you. So they will go and find out if you've got a pension with that employer and how much it's worth and where it is and where it's invested and all the details about it. So that could be a really easy way of doing it, and just letting someone else do all that detective work and taking the strain of trying to find those old pensions.
And a lot of the time that's connected with an option to combine your pensions, perhaps using that provider that's helping you find them. Why should we combine them? When should we combine them? Because it's not always straightforward.
Why should we do it? I think there's a lot of advantages to doing it. Because, as we've just said, managing 10 different pensions can be a real administrative headache. I would hate to have to do that. So I think it makes your life easier and simpler just having one or two different pensions. And then you can just keep track of exactly how much money you've got. It's one of those things that if you have 10 different statements in front of you and you add up the totals of all of them, you might actually be pleasantly surprised about how much you've built up overall. But you don't have this overall picture. So that's why combining them can put you really in the driving seat, because you know how much money that you have got to saved up for your later life. And you can then decide what to do with that money. So there's various reasons why now might be the best time to do it. It could be that you've just joined a new employer and you've just got your, I don't know, your seventh pension scheme. And you go, actually, do you know what? That's just too many. I've done enough. Or it could be a significant birthday, and you might think, actually, I'm getting towards now actually thinking about these sort of things. Or it could be a New Year's resolution, or you could have just got an inheritance through, or a windfall of pot of money from somewhere, and you're thinking, well, actually, what am I going to do with this? And investing it in a pension might be a really good idea. But first of all, you probably need to know exactly how much money you've already got and where it is. So all of these reasons mean that it's probably now is a good time to have a look at it and think about how to go about it. But there is a checklist out there. You don't want to be combining all of your pensions. You just need to sort of stop and have a quick think about them and to figure out which ones you want to move. So because pension plans come in different formats and different ways, then some of them might have exit penalties on them, which means that if you move them, there will be a penalty. So before you do that, you might want to think twice about that. Also, if you've got a current pension and your employer is paying into that, then you don't want to move that one probably, because your employer will stop paying. And you need all the employer contributions you can get. We all do. So that's the best way of saving towards your retirement, is a good employer pension contribution. So don't do anything to upset that one.
And also, we had quite a lot of questions, Rachel, on our last episode when we put them to a financial advisor, when people were talking about certain public sector schemes and wondering if they should move those, because they come with certain gold-plated benefits that you just don't find elsewhere.
Yes, those ones are called defined benefit, to use the jargon. And those are really valuable pension schemes. And you will find that you can't move a public sector scheme anyway. They won't let you do that. That's within the rules that you can't transfer one of those. But there are other pension schemes that work in a very similar way, which are called defined benefit schemes. And if you work in the private sector, you might have one of these. Now, these are really valuable. And so if you unearth one and you find it and you think, well, what do I do with that? You're probably going to need to get regulated financial advice on that. You're not allowed to touch it until you've received that. So you would have to go and speak to a financial advisor about what your options are. But most of the time, it's probably in your best interests just to leave it where it is.
And you will get an alert about that, because I know I was looking at combining one of my old pensions, and it wasn't fantastically gold-plated, but it certainly had some benefits attached to it. And I got a message back just saying, we're not going to move this unless you get advice.
Yes, you will probably find that that comes up for old, maybe older type pensions and things like that, but certainly they are out there. And it's only then people aren't trying to stop you doing what you want with your money. This is all about helping protect what you have built up. And these are so valuable and they are worth keeping and worth knowing exactly where they are. And it's worth making sure that you keep in contact with that employer or pension provider and you let them know where you are as well. So every time you change address or email address or whatever it happens to be, because you don't want to lose sight of one of those.
But if you have, we'll call them normal pension pots, if you have the type of pot where it is easy to combine and you don't get those red flags, if you put them all together, you might end up with quite a sizable pot. And I'm guessing that if you've got more money in a pot, that it's going to make more money.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the rules about investment is that you're leaving it there to grow alongside the stock market and alongside shares and equities and things like that. So if you have all your money together, it will grow and it will increase in value. And it's pensions in a way, they are so complicated. And I do understand that people struggle with them. I really do. And I really want to help people understand them. But essentially, you can boil it down to really simple ideas. You put in money, it stays invested, and then you take it out. So the more money you can put in, the better it is. And the better the investment return you get, the more investment growth you get, the better that is. And the longer you can leave your money in there, so the earlier you start saving, the better it is as well. So you put in, but then you get back what you've put in. So it's some really basic ideas there. So don't be scared about pensions. Just try and think of it in that way.
And I know for a lot of women, we've spoken about the fact that women's employment journeys can be very different from men's. They might take time off in order to look after children. They might go back part-time. And when we're talking about a workplace pension, lots of women that work part-time might not get one.
Yes, this can be a problem. So as I said, every time you join a new employer, you are automatically enrolled into the employer's pension scheme. But some people aren't. So if you are under the age of 22, you won't be. And if you're over the age of 66, you won't be. And then the other ones who are excluded are ones who earn less than £10,000. So you are only automatically enrolled if you earn over £10,000. So you could have three jobs and you could be working 45 hours a week and you could be earning £9,000 from each of those three jobs and earning £27,000 in total. But it doesn't matter. You won't automatically be put into your pension scheme. But there is something to be really aware of in this sort of situation is that if you do earn less than £10,000, as long as you earn over, say, about £6,000, just over £6,200, then you can ask your employer to join the pension scheme. And in that situation, your employer has to pay in a pension contribution for you. So if you fall into that bracket of income, so over £6,250, and under £10,000, then get in touch with your employer and make sure you take them up on this offer that you can join the pension scheme. But you have to raise your hand and say, I want that to happen. But that way you get this employer contribution. And that is so important because it just effectively doubles your money, that and the tax relief. And it just means that you can save so much more for your retirement.
So, Dan, are you talking to Rachel Vay there? And I know that she shared her financial confession with us in the New Year's episode, but did you manage to prize another one out of her? Maybe a pensions-related one?
I did, and it was a pensions-related confession, and it just proves that even people that work in pensions, in financial services, are human.
I've been thinking about what we've just been speaking about, and I have a financial confession to make that I do have a pension scheme that I joined when I was 21, I think, and I left when I was 28. So it was a long, long time ago. But I'm not entirely sure. I think I know where it is, but I don't know how much money I've got in it, and I don't know whether to transfer it or not, or combine it with my other pensions. So I really do need to go and find it and to unearth it. Now, I've already had a go. I've written to the employer, but I didn't get a response. And I thought, oh, too difficult. Put it on the back burner. Can't be bothered. Got too much stuff going on. And actually, what I need to do is just to pull up my socks and just do it and get back in touch with the employer and say, this is my money and I have a right to know where it is. So that is my financial confession.
So even people in the industry, even people that work with pensions every day, still are human.
Absolutely, yes.
Very good to hear there that Rachel is equally as bad as the rest of us at keeping track of all of these different pension pots. Even you can have the best intentions and be scuppered, but good to know that even the experts get it wrong sometimes.
Because there's so much paperwork and our lives are so busy, and trying to fit that in when you're juggling everything else is just so hard, especially when you hit a brick wall like that. You know, you're trying to get some kind of momentum and then you're stopped in your tracks and you kind of just feel like, right, well, I did that. And now I've got to do it all over again. But thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Money Matters podcast. Don't forget to get in touch with us on social media. We are AJ Bell Money Matters on X, Instagram and Facebook. And you can email us hello@ajbellmoneymatters.co.uk.
And for those of you in the northwest of the country, don't forget we are hosting the finance stage at the Anything is Possible live event on Saturday, the 27th of April at Old Trafford in Manchester. Tickets are on sale now. It looks set to be a fantastic event with loads of great speakers, and we'd love to see you there. We'll also have a discount code going out in our next newsletter on April the 12th. So sign up on the website ajbellmoneymatters.co.uk. to get that money off code. And thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time.
Before you go, please remember this podcast is for educational purposes, and the views expressed don't necessarily reflect those of AJ Bell. The podcast isn't telling you if a certain investment is suitable or not. Don't forget that the value of investments can change, and you can lose money as well as make it. It's also important to remember that how you're taxed will depend on your individual circumstances, and rules can change. The way an investment performed in the past may not be the same as how it behaves in the future. If you want help, go see a qualified financial advisor.